thanking you for inviting me here because I really appreciate to be able to meet with you at this unique place and this unique institution. The Bundespresskonferenz is an expression of free and independent press, and that's an important part of our democratic societies. And for me to meet the press is an important part of my responsibilities as the Secretary General of NATO, because I strongly believe that political leaders, we should be available, we should be someone who are able to address, to answer, to discuss with the public and with the press, because that's part of being a democratic society, being an alliance of democratic nations, is that we are working with the press to have a transparent and open public debate related to defense and security issues. Second, I would like to start by stating that what happened in Paris last week reminds of us on how important security and defense is, because that was an attack on innocent people, but it was also an attack on the freedom of expression, the freedom of opinion, and our open societies. And it has been important to see how united Europe has stood together in both condemning the acts of terror, but also in defending the open societies we so highly value. And NATO is an alliance of democratic countries defending the same core values that were attacked in Paris last week. And I think that what happened in Paris also underlines that the security environment is changing. And NATO has to meet and to address new challenges, new threats. We see that they emerge from many different directions. To the south, we see instability, violence coming closer to our borders in Iraq and Syria. Iraq and Syria are neighbor countries to a NATO ally, Turkey. We see the instability in Northern Africa, chaos, violence close to our borders. And we see also terrorist attacks linked to the instability and security in these regions. So the attacks are also taking place in our streets. To the east, we see new challenges emerging. We have seen that the independence, the integrity, the sovereignty of Ukraine has been intimidated, not respected. And and if you add this to a dangerous mix of missile proliferation, cyber attacks, and also energy distortions or disruptions, then you see that we are living in a world with threats and challenges which we have to face. And I would just tell you briefly about how NATO is facing those challenges. And we are doing that by focusing on three priorities. Priority number one is to keep NATO strong, to make sure that NATO also in the future is able to protect and defend all allies against any threat. And that's the reason why we now are adapting our forces so they are more ready and more deployable, so we are sure that we are able to have the right forces in the right place, in the right time, whenever needed. And Germany is playing a vital role in doing so when we now are in the process of establishing a new high readiness force, We have an interim solution already in place. Actually, it's going to be established today. Today, we have the establishment of an interim high readiness force where Germany is the lead key nation. And that takes place today. And that's an testbed, an interim solution for a more permanent high readiness force, which is important both to meet the challenges to the east and to the south of the alliance, making us able to defend all allies. We have also implemented assurance measures, especially also in the east of the alliance, with more air policing, with more exercises, and with more presence also, naval presence in the Baltic Sea and the Black Sea. This will continue as long as it takes, as long as necessary. Then, so the first priority is to keep NATO strong. The second priority is to help keep our neighborhood stable by working with partners. It's always nice to help neighbors. But in addition, it is in our own interest to help our neighbors be stable, safe, and secure. So we are working with countries like Moldova, Georgia, Ukraine, to enable them to be better able to take care of their own security in their own region, in their own country, and also helping us with fighting terrorism. We do the same in the south, especially with a country like Jordan and other countries, where we are working with partnerships, many partnerships around in the world, trying to increase their capabilities of creating stability in their own countries and own region. For many years, we also have worked for a more constructive partnership with Russia. And NATO still strive for a cooperative, constructive relationship with Russia. NATO does not seek confrontation with Russia. But if we are going to have a constructive and cooperative relationship with Russia, Russia must want it too. And then Russia has to respect the fundamental rules of coexistence between nations, and that is that you respect the borders of nations. And that's important because that's the only way we can really create a cooperative relationship between nations in Europe is that we respect each other and our borders and our sovereignty. I believe that there is no contradiction at all between firmness, military strength, and dialogue. Actually, I believe that the only way that we can achieve the dialogue and the cooperative relationship with Russia we are seeking is that we have a dual-track or two-track approach, strong defense, and dialogue. And that's my other message, is that we need partnerships with many different countries in many parts of the world that will stabilize our environment, and that's important for NATO. And the third message is that to be able to both keep NATO strong and to help our neighbors to help them take care of their own security by themselves, we need to invest more in defense. And for a long period, NATO countries have reduced their defense spending, partly as a result of the end of the Cold War. And I think that was right. It was a peace dividend that almost all countries benefited from. But we continued to cut defense spending because of the financial crisis. And in the same period, Russia has increased their defense spending. And more than that, they have also shown willingness to use force. So now the time has come to change. And therefore, we made a decision as 28 allies at our summit in NATO in Wales in September that we were going to stop the cuts in defense spending, that we were going to gradually increase our defense spending as our economies grow, and aim to reach the 2% goal during the next decade for defense spending. This is my main message, and this is my main priorities. And the fundamental thing is that by working together, by protecting each other, by adhering to the fundamental principle of one for all for one, we are able to protect our open, free societies, which we so highly value. Thank you.
Thank you. We come to Fragen, Frau van Haan.
I would like to put two questions. First of all, do you see an impact between the terrorist attacks in Paris and the engagement of French troops in Mali and in the north of Mali? And do you think that also in Germany we must have fear that our engagement, for example, in northern Iraq, would also make the situation more difficult in Germany too? Second question, do you see in the long run, or do you wish that Ukraine will be a member in NATO?
When it comes to the terrorist attacks in Paris, I think it's too early to state exactly what kind of connections, what were, you know, who was behind, and to what extent this was small isolated groups or part of a larger organization. But the important thing, which I think is important to state, is that now the focus has to be that we have to stand up for those values that were attacked. And the best way of defending our societies against a terrorist attack is to be even stronger on the message that we are going to have the freedom of press, open societies. So more freedom of press is the best answer to the attack on the free press we saw last week in Paris. When it comes to Mali, I think it's, I'm not able to comment on whether there are any relationships or not. But I think that we all see that what France is doing in Africa is actually also to fight terrorist organizations. And it's not a NATO operation, but many NATO allies are participating in different operations against terror organizations, like we, for instance, see both in Africa. Germany is also part of that, but also, for instance, in fighting ISIL in Iraq and Syria. And I welcome those efforts to fight these different kinds of terrorist organizations, being it ISIL or Boko Haram or whatever. When it comes to, you asked me about Ukraine. Yeah. So when it comes to Ukraine, I think that it is important to underline that all countries have the right to decide their own path. And that is a fundamental principle which all countries in Europe, including Russia, have subscribed to. So I will respect the decision of Ukraine. Some years ago, they decided to be a non-bloc country, and I respected that. And I respect if they make another decision. And whether Ukraine is going to become a member of NATO or not, that's a question which is going to be decided by Ukraine and by the 28 allies within NATO, no one else. And that should be respected. The Ukraine has underlined itself that it will take some time. They are now focusing on the process of reforming their society to prepare themselves. And then we are following that process.
Nils.
Mr. Secretary General, there's often said that NATO also is a political alliance, but to me it seems that you and your predecessor are more or less on the promotion tour to increase the military budgets, referring to the Ukraine crisis, and not completing the political concept. Could you elaborate maybe a minute on that? To look at it separated. And the second question, what is, in your opinion, what is the relationship to OSCE between NATO and, because there are some experts commenting that they would prefer doubting OSCE dealing with the Ukraine crisis because it's more useful basis. So, I mean, do you think it's NATO's part or was he part in first?
So NATO is both a political alliance and a military alliance. And actually the two parts of NATO is working very close together because it's one alliance with both a political and a military dimension. And I think I said in my introduction that I very much believe in the two-track approach, that we need firmness, we need a strong military defense to create the basis for a political dialogue. And just to underline, there is no contradiction between a strong defense and a political dialogue. Actually, security, strong defense, creates the basis for engaging with Russia. So for me, there is not either political or military alliance. It's both at the same time. And it's an interdependence between the political message and the military message. When it comes to OSCE, that's a very important organization. It's based on some of the core principles which also NATO is based on, and that's the independence of and respect for every nation's right to decide itself. That's in the Helsinki Act, in the founding document for the OSCE. And those rules, those fundamental principles, are those principles that has been violated in Ukraine. So there is no contradiction between believing in the values that NATO is protecting and the values that the OSCE is based on. And the OSCE is playing an important role in Ukraine in monitoring the ceasefire and monitoring the whole Minsk agreement. The problem is that the Minsk agreement is not respected. There is no military solution to the crisis in Ukraine. It has to be a political solution, a negotiated solution. But then we have to enable OSCE to do its work, and the Minsk Accord, the ceasefire, has to be respected.
Zusatz?
A very brief follow-up to the military budget question. Don't you think that more than $800 billion all over some NATO as military budgets is not enough to fulfill the Article 5 commitments?
NATO is a strong alliance. And NATO is able to protect and defend all allies. But what I'm saying is that the security environment is changing. And we have to adapt to that. It's changing partly because we see new threats, terror, instability to our south. That will require a lot of efforts from NATO allies to counter those threats. And we see also a more aggressive Russia in Ukraine. In addition to that, we also see more global challenges, like, for instance, the rise of other powers in other parts of the world. And we have reduced our defense spending by more than 20%, or almost around 20% during the last 5 years. At the same time, Russia has increased their defense spending, and more than that, they have shown willingness to use force. So what I'm saying is that we are a strong alliance, but to maintain our ability to protect and defend all allies, we have to adapt, and part of that adaptation is also to invest more in defense because the world has changed.
Frau Kollegin.
Mr. Stoltenberg, why do you know and do you have some updated information about Russian military equipment and Russian combat troops on the border and if it's entering Ukraine in the last days?
I cannot go into details related to what has happened the last few days. But in general, we see that Russia is continuing to support the separatists, that equipment, forces, or has been is at the border, and also that there has been some movements into Ukraine. Because we are very much aware of that that is a real threat to our societies. And the problem or the challenge of foreign fighters has been there for a long time. But the numbers of foreign fighters, they have has increased. And they're much closer to our borders. Afghanistan was in one way far away. Iraq and Syria is very close. So more focus, more exchange of information related to foreign fighters. Training to enable us to be more able to fight terror. Funding of technology, which enables us, funding of the development of the technology, which increases our capabilities of fighting terror. For instance, related to technology that can detect explosives and protect us against explosives. That's something which NATO is working on and doing. And then I would like to add a final point, and that is that, you know, the biggest operation NATO has ever conducted is the Afghanistan ISAF operation. That was a counter-terror operation in the way that the reason why we went into Afghanistan with a strong and clear UN mandate was a direct response on the terrorist attack 9/11 in the United States. And the main goal of the Afghan NATO operation was to prevent that Afghanistan is a safe haven for terrorist organizations. We do some when we fight piracy off the Horn of Africa, it's something similar. So our major military operations is also related to fighting terror. It was one more.
On the suspected Russian staff of operating.
Yeah, sorry. Then I think it is extremely important to underline that now there is an independent investigation going on, organized by the Dutch authorities. And I think it is extremely important for the credibility of that investigation that we all, in a way, do not start to speculate too much, but just see that this is a very serious incident, or many people were killed, and what we need is the result of this investigation, and then hopefully they will be able to provide us with a clear answer as possible. So I will undermine, in a way, the independence, the credibility of that, if I now start on behalf of NATO and the allied countries to try to point out who were responsible. I leave that to those who are in charge of the independent investigation.
May I add one more question? But I understand that that very last point, you don't want to undermine the independent investigation, the Dutch investigation. But on the other hand, we have that kind of journalist and experts investigations as well. So would you say that the sources you have from your very own NATO sources are in contradiction to this suspect or not?
It's a very clever question, but your job is to ask those questions, and my job is not answer them. So we are both doing what we are expected to do. But again, no. But I mean, the thing is that I think journalists are playing a very important role to look into what happened, to reveal facts, to find out. But I am in a position where I'm representing 28 nations, one of them Holland and the Netherlands. They are in charge of the international investigation. And everything I do will be in support of the independence and the credibility of that investigation. So I would just wait. But if the journalist or all journalists that have some kind of relevant information should just contact the government of the Netherlands, and those people are responsible working with the investigation, and give the information to them, and then trust that it will be handled in the best possible way.
Mr. Stoltenberg, you called, rightly so, NATO a military and a political alliance. This political alliance is based on democracy, with common values, among them increased freedom of press, what you mentioned here also facing the Bundespressekonferenz.
if a member state is deviating from these common values, does not any longer respect them, what will happen? For example, in Turkey, the press freedom is under serious pressure. Are there any mechanisms within NATO to rein in such deviations from common values? Otherwise, yeah, the image of NATO would be in doubt.
The most important mechanism within NATO is an open dialogue, an open debate. And whenever countries have different opinions related to international developments, national developments, policies of different countries, we discuss that as allies. I am representing all 28 allied nations, but I know that there are discussions going on between many nations related to many issues within the alliance. And that's the strength of an open alliance, is that we are also able to address, to discuss those issues which are difficult for some of us. And I trust that, or I know that that's going on in NATO.
Discussion is fine, but to what way?
But I think that...
Are there any mechanisms to say, here's the borderline?
So all NATO allies has to adhere to the principles of NATO, which is democracy and open free societies. And part of that is also then to have open discussions. And I believe that arguments, discussions, openness, transparency, both by governments but also by journalists, the media, is creating the pressure we all need to make sure that we always strive for openness and the freedom of press.
10 minutes haben wir noch. Herr Kollege, Sie sind der Nächste. Ja, hier, bitte.
Hello. There now appears to be a claim of responsibility by Al-Qaeda in Yemen for the shootings in Paris last week. As far as I know, the last time a NATO ally experienced an act of terrorism by a known and named group in a foreign state was Afghanistan and September 11th, which you've already mentioned. What do you anticipate, what do you think should be the response of NATO if it turns out that Al-Qaeda in Yemen was responsible for the Charlie Hebdo and other attacks in Paris?
I think it will be wrong on me to start to speculate what could be the answer. I think we now have to wait to see the final results of the investigations and the work the French police and the French authorities are doing related to the background for the terrorist attacks in Paris, and then make our judgments and assessments afterwards. Because if I now start to speculate, I think it just can create a lot of confusion. This is very serious. We have to address it in a very serious way, and that's the reason why we have to keep to the rules and not start to speculate before we have the facts on the table.
Herr Wiegold.
Well, here I am. You mentioned in your introductory remarks the high readiness interim task force. Actually, what we have today is a transfer of authority to the headquarters in Münster, not yet a deployable task force. What does NATO foresee when this tool will be in any way operational? And there has been some debate about the funding of this high readiness force as well as of the VJTF. Do you foresee any common funding for this rather expensive task?
Yeah. So first to the last question related to funding, we have not decided the precise size composition of the force. We are in the process of doing that, but normally it will be a combination of some common funding, meaning funded out of the NATO budget, and also then funded by the participating nations, or cost lays where they fall, and I think that's in a way the most probable solution also this time, a combination of common funding and national funding. In the long run, it's always all the allies who pays in one way or another. There is no way we get, I mean, we have to pay one way or another, but either as individual nations or through the NATO budget. But the final decisions have not yet been taken. The other question I actually didn't understand.
Well, you said as of today we have an interim hybrid.
Yeah.
In fact, we do have a land component command to coordinate, but we have no, or NATO has no interim hybrid task force yet effectively. When do you expect that this tool can be deployable, usable in any way?
So we have we are going to address that question at the NATO ministerial meeting in the beginning of February in a few weeks. So I will be able to perhaps be more precise on exactly when we will have this so the more permanent high readiness force in place. But as I said, we from today have an interim solution in place, which is of great importance, and there is full focus on establishing the more or the permanent full-fledged high readiness force. So we expect that to happen as soon as possible, but I think it's too early for me to give you an exact date, but hopefully I can tell you more within a few weeks when we have the defense ministerial meeting in Brussels.
Excuse me if I may follow up. I don't quite understand why you say we have this interim solution in place, as what we have as of today is a headquarters for an interim high readiness task force,
no.
Not the task force itself.
No.
I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, correct.
No. We have the force. It's Germany which have allocated forces. Not only there's a headquarters in Szczecin, I think you we call it multinational. Headquarters northeast. That's already there. But then we also have forces which are available, operational now, from today. And that's partly German forces, together with Dutch forces and Norwegian forces and some others. And from today, they are operational. They are in place. So we have this interim solution. That's the land component, as you rightly said, and we are working also on the other components, and we are working on a more permanent solution. And the idea with the permanent solution is partly that it's going to be a bit bigger or bigger than the interim solution, and it's going to have an even higher readiness. But we have a force with high readiness in place from today.
To what extent is it damaged or can be damaged despite against terrorism by the fact of NATO and Russia not getting along so well? So, in other words, what could Russia do to help protect this environment?
So what we call on Russia to respect its international obligations. And the most fundamental international obligation Russia, as all other countries in Europe, have is to respect their neighbors. And respect the neighbors means respect the borders of the neighbors and not violating their territorial integrity and sovereignty by using force or by supporting the separatists. And that's the most important thing they can do, partly to contribute to a peaceful solution of the conflict in Ukraine, which is important for all the people living in Ukraine, but is also important because it will contribute to a rule-based order in Europe, which then will enable us to have much more cooperation on many different areas. And again, we are striving for that cooperative relationship. And let me add just briefly that I was Prime Minister in Norway for some years, and we had a good working relationship with Russia. And we were able to cooperate with Russia in many different fields. And I think that the experience I have from Norway is that there is, as I said, no contradiction between strength and cooperation. Actually, it goes hand in hand.
Let me follow up. Concerning the present threat
of jihadist terrorism, what can be expected from Russia, and if you could elaborate more on that.
The terrorism is an international problem, posing threats on countries all over the world, including on Russia. NATO and Russia had for some years cooperation on fighting terror. This cooperation is now suspended because of the crisis in Ukraine. But as I said, we strive for re-establishing this kind of cooperation because I think it's of mutual benefit both for Russia and for NATO.
There are a couple of questions remaining, but we have to come to an end. Last question, Mr. Jessen.
Coming back to one question you would like to answer, Mr. Stoltenberg. In full respect that you don't want to undermine the Netherlands investigation, but in case the Dutch investigators following certain tracks, ask NATO if you've got any evidence, any information on these things, on these theories, suspects, would you be willing to hand over your information to the investigators?
Yeah, so we will do whatever we can to support the investigators and to support the ongoing investigation. And we also urge all allied countries, all NATO members, to do the same. And I'm certain that those who are responsible for the investigation, they are working closely with several allies and look into whether they have information which is of relevance of the investigation. So I also welcome information from journalists, from independent sources. But the thing is that if I started to say that I believe this or I believe that, in a way, drawing conclusions too early, and I'm so important for me that when the result is in place, then it should be respected by everyone, and it should be a result with a very high credibility.